It is Saturday, March 9th, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. Welcome to Geek Speak. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. We bridge the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. In the air with me, I'm lucky to say, is Bonnie Jean Primsch, broadcaster at large, mediator, and printmaker. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. And next to you is someone we haven't seen in a while.
I know.
Back from Bali, it's Ben Jaffe. Hi, Ben.
What's up?
Ben Jaffe, ladies and gentlemen.
Ben Jaffe's a world instructor and world traveler.
A world instructor?
Yeah, I think
world
so.
Instructor.
You teach me about the world.
I teach in parts of the world.
Definitely do.
That's in California.
Was Bali good?
Bali was amazing.
Yeah?
Bali was amazing.
Anything geeky on your travels?
I don't know.
You unplugged a bit, didn't you?
I did unplug a bit. I actually did not bring my computer, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I didn't bring my computer. I brought just an iPad on my phone, and I stayed mostly off the internet, off the grid. It was amazing. It was fantastic. And I do have to say, I have a bit of a geeky thing with traffic, with watching traffic. And we talked about stoplights a month and a half or 2 months ago or something like that. Traffic in Bali is really fascinating. It works very differently. And I was trying to figure out a good geeky way of explaining it. Ben, I think it's the difference between DSL and cable. So if you think about DSL, you have a fixed amount of your pipe, we'll say, to the internet. A fixed amount is for sending things out, and a fixed amount is for pulling things in, right?
Upload, download, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So if you imagine it as a straw, there's a portion of that straw is for upload, a portion is for download. You can't change how much is for upload and how much is for download.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas cable is a lot more open. So cable, you can, if you're sending a lot of stuff, then much more of your pipe will be used for upload,
right,
and much more for download. Bali roads are kind of like that. Like the entire road can be used for one direction if no one's coming in the other direction.
That doesn't sound safe at all.
As a passenger, it's kind of freaky. It's really freaky.
Oh, are we doing this now?
in addition to that, there are cars, but most people are riding Vespas. And so unlike, I guess this breaks out of my metaphor, right? But you've got Vespas passing all the cars. It seems more as a matter of impatience rather than trying to get there faster. It's terrifying the first day and really interesting.
So Ben explores Bali traffic by network traffic packets.
Well, I don't know. That's the analogy I came up with.
I like.
Or just fluid, water, you know? It's more like water, whereas if you think about driving in, I guess, many Western countries, it's more like a bunch of boxes speeding along a long stretch, you know? But it was fluid. It was
all
kind
right.
of
well,
amazing.
since you're chatting, what's your first news story? You had some information
about
art?
I had some thank yous.
Some thank yous.
Yeah, so a lot of people called in during Dr. Dawn. We'd like to thank all of them. We've got several anonymous donors. One anonymous from Salinas, one from Ben Lomond, thank you. One from Aptus, and then we have two anonymous donors from Santa Cruz, so we want to thank them. And then I've also got some names to read. We'd like to thank Mark, and actually during the music at the intro of the show, I put these in chronological order.
Oh, nice.
Just because I'm that much of a geek.
Geek.
Thank you, Mark from Santa Cruz, Georgia from Santa Cruz, Kathy from Santa Cruz, Linda from Santa Cruz, Kim from Salinas, and Constance from Santa Cruz, and 1B from Santa Cruz. So thank you all very much for giving to KUSP. We really do appreciate it.
Very, very much so. Thank you.
All right. So I do have a first news story. So we all have heard about digital rights management, DRM, right? It's the thing that prevents you from taking something you bought, let's say from Apple or from Amazon or whoever, and sharing that digital copy with a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
A lot of times they'll put limits on how much you can use it. They'll say you can only play back this 5 times or 8 times or on 3 different devices or something.
Mm-hmm.
So some people in a global design competition created the DRM chair. And the DRM chair,
I remember reading about this. You can sit in it a limited number of times.
You can sit in it 8 times, and then it self-destructs.
Like, so how do you decide when it's time to sit in that chair?
That's how do they design that?
Well, I don't know. You sit in the chair when you want to sit in the chair. It's an art piece.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was this in a gallery for a period of time?
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah, how'd they make it? How'd they decide? How does it self-destruct it?
How does it work?
How does it know to self-destruct?
And how does it self-destruct?
I mean, it does kind of show how ridiculous DRM is, using an object that we don't think of as DRMable, right? What it has is it's Arduino controlled. Arduino is a microcontroller you can program on. It's a very small computer. And it's got a pressure sensor, so you can figure out
how many times people sit down.
And it counts. And it even counts up. And then at the end, once the last person has sat in it and gets up, then it makes this foreboding clicking sound. And then it sits there as very slowly all of the joints start to melt.
Nice.
Whoa! What?
And then eventually the whole thing comes just... crashing down.
And there's a video, right? We can see this.
There is a video. I have to say, I was really expecting when I first saw this, there's a chair, you sit on it the eighth time, you walk away, and then it ticks down and explodes or something.
Right.
It's a lot less...
You don't want fragments flying over the house.
Fall,
you know?
Down on the eighth sit-down.
Right.
To collapse.
Doesn't do anything
until
the ninth, and then boom, it's not a chair.
or you know, you get off the eighth time, and it falls on the sleeping cat next nearby.
Right. Okay, cool. So just kind of pulling the idea, the ridiculous qualities of DRM into the physical space. That's what
the
piece is about.
Absolutely. And it really does a good job of illustrating it. Because when we're talking about digital things, we're not used to those things being a certain way. So we accept it the way they come. But chairs,
you know. These kind of art pieces are going to be more and more important to me as I leave university and no longer am associated with this kind of work. Because this is the kind of work the students that the Digital Arts New Media Program work on. And I'm going to be disconnected as I leave. I'm sad. But thank you for... So keep bringing these stories.
When are you leaving?
The 31st of March, my last day at UCS.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I've already started my new job. It's a lot of fun. But we won't get into that right now. Instead, I want to say that in a minute, Bonnie's going to talk about new skulls, 3D printed skulls.
Yeah, you get a new one.
I love it.
Fresh.
I might need one, especially after this hour. Before we do that, I want to mention that, and I haven't done this yet, and I need to do this, that for, I don't know, 12 years or so, I've been doing Geek Speak, and it's a volunteer gig. I come in here and pull together some friends and some geeky people and cover the week news. We do this volunteer. We love radio. We love sharing knowledge. And we do that on KOSP because the space exists for it to happen here. An amazing venue to produce new content. We have a room that's soundproofed with really good equipment that's been purchased by the community. This is a community center. And for me, much more so than probably a lot of people, it's kind of a second home. I grew up here at the station. I started coming here when I was just getting into music with my father. He worked here. And I'd come in, and while he was doing his show, I'd sit back in the back room and pull records down and record them to reel to reel and cut little segments together, kind of playing like my father did. And I grew up knowing the people here and the community around here so much so that I have this affinity and love for it, which means that I will probably never leave KOSP. But I know that even when you're not someone that comes here every day and has it a part of their ingrained world, KOSP means something to you because it's something you listen to and it's a part of your world. And we're inviting you now to show that that is important to you, that KOSP is important to you.
Well, and there's a reason for it. We are very proud to be a publicly funded radio station.
Yeah.
It's a business model that we prefer over the commercial model where, you know, maybe the content matters, usually not. Usually it's just filler between advertisements and designed, you know, sort of callously designed to appeal to a particular demographic that advertisers want to reach.
Yeah.
Here at KOSP... it's what the public is interested in and wants to hear. And we have an opportunity, we have an ability to be responsive to the community and to be a community center, as you say, Lyle, because we are funded largely by individual donors, by members of this community who offer something, you know, some amount, some financial amount to the station so that it equals what we need to keep running and keep providing content that can feed our curious minds.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're doing now. This is a pledge drive. What's day three or four? Day four of the pledge drive. We'll be going for a little while. We want to raise $115,000. That's
which
what the
seems,
budget says we need.
Yeah, which we can definitely do.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to raise a couple thousand during this hour. I don't know how far we'll get, but we do have some help. There's a matching gift from Heidi Hopkins and Jim Mers who've offered, this is really lovely, a matching gift of $1,000, you guys. Whatever anyone wants to contribute right now, up to a total of $1,000, will be doubled, for dollar, by Heidi Hopkins and Jim Mers. That's true if you call us now. We'll give the phone number in a minute. That's true if you go to the website, kusp.org.
And that's only true if you do those things.
And that's only true if you do those things. You could, I suppose, walk it in. We're at 203 8th Avenue in Santa Cruz by the Yacht Harbor. So here's the phone number. It's 888-777-1507. That's the phone number. And as I said, our web address is kusp.org. If you go there and click on the red donate button, you can also make your contribution that way.
Now, if you do call in, you'll be listening to you'll be talking to a volunteer that's sitting in the other room. I can see them in there waiting for your call. And Rick is one of those people that volunteers his time every week to answer phones for us. And he's in there. So if you do call right now, you get to talk to Rick most likely, or at least one of them in the other room, and contribute. I would really personally appreciate it. And it's very important to the station.
It's sort of necessary, frankly, to the station that you make your contribution.
The phone number again is 888-777-1507. And I want to urge you to do that now while the show is going on. It seems to get very busy at the end of the show. So now's your opportunity to do it right now. 888-777-1507. And while we're waiting for those calls to come in and such, Bonnie, would you tell us about 3D printed skulls?
Yeah. So this 3D printing is just going gangbusters. People are finding all kinds of ways to use it. And we've heard about sort of medical replacements, internal replacements before. So there's this company that has come up with a design for basically a 3D printed skull. They've found a material, PEKK. It's called polyether ketone. Sounds cool. Like a member of the silly party, but anyway, it's apparently the material is perfect for this. If you don't smooth it, which is the temptation with a lot of this 3D printed stuff, to smooth it out. But if you don't smooth it, it has approximately the roughness and the strength of actual bone.
Oh, cool.
So it serves very well as a replacement.
And of course, it's important for bones to have a texture to them, of course, because the ligaments and muscles attached to them.
Right.
So we're really talking about potentially replacing large parts of human tissue.
It's getting bionic in here.
It's kind of creepy, man.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful story about someone getting a new jaw, a titanium printed jaw.
Oh.
So this is now the skull.
And not titanium.
This is like a plastic.
Well, we'll
plastic.
Link to an article on our website on geekspeak.org.
And a plastic, of course, are a lot easier to print. I'm assuming titanium is actually the whole process.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about temperature and skull. It's one of the reasons why you wouldn't want a titanium skull. The head has to radiate, has to do things that are besides just that.
It's really hot and painful.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool that bone emulation plastic printed now.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we'll link to it.
Definitely. Yeah. And Ben, what's going on with cameras? You're a video guy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so there is a camera, a prototype camera that Canon has developed. It is a 35mm full-frame CMOS sensor for capturing video.
What does that mean?
It's a sensor in a camera. It's one of the several types of sensors that we use for cameras, right?
Okay, can I talk about full frame for just a second?
Yeah, do it.
So in a traditional SLR camera, this is the cameras you'd see at like a wedding photographer uses.
Yeah.
Before there was digital, the actual sensor was film, right? It was a chemical thing. It was 35mm in size. That's a little bigger than an inch wide, right? And it's that proportion that we think of as photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And that sensor, for a chemical thing, the bit larger the sensor is, the more detail you can get on the print. Okay, mm-hmm. So big sensors, real good.
Yeah.
So digital sensors come along, and they're not. It's hard to make them that large, so they make them smaller. And they made them smaller for a while, and there have been full-frame ones for a while. My camera, for example, is a 3/4 size of that sensor, which means the detail is not going to be as good as a full-frame sensor. So full-frame, 35mm full-frame sensors for SLR cameras is a pro-level camera, and it's something that all photographers probably want if they're aware of it. So what's this one about?
So this one is this one's unprecedented in that it's extremely sensitive compared to the ones that we currently have. So for example, if you look at Canon's EOS 1DX, that's their top of the line model right now, the pixels on the CMOS sensor that I'm talking about right now are 19 microns square in size. That's 7.5 times the size of their top of the line camera right now that they're selling. So that what that means is also the bigger each pixel is, the more light it can capture, the more photons hit it, and the more light it can capture. So that's often why you see bigger lenses, you know, do a lot better with low light than small lenses do. Right? It's just more pixels, more photons, and more data. Right? So some of the things that they have filmed with this is they've filmed a room that was illuminated only with incense sticks, a couple incense sticks that were burning, and they shot this. They can actually...
That's the only light in the room.
That was the only light in the room.
Some smoldering incense.
Yeah. Fantastic. Or what they say is that it can... you can shoot clearly visible video images in environments that are as dimly lit as 0.03 lux of,
well, that's really clear.
Of illumination, which is, for those of you who don't know, you know, lux, like me, I didn't. It's about the brightness of a crescent moon. So if you had a crescent moon and you were shooting with just the light of the crescent moon, that's about how bright it would be.
So it's not very, just about the width of the actual sensor, which is kind of exciting, but also the amount of light that you actually need to get a really good photograph.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a connection between those, of course, right? If you made a really huge sensor, like the size of a laptop screen or something, that was actually a sensor with the same sensitivity and specifications, which I'm sure we can't probably do right now. But if you were to, then you would be able to probably, you know, light a candle in a church and take a nice picture of the entire church or something ridiculous like that. Just because the more photons, again, the clearer the image. The other thing that they did is they filmed one of the meteor showers, the Geminids, I think.
Okay.
Sweet.
And it's really beautiful video. And they show also the top of the line camera shooting the same thing right next to it. So you can see the difference.
The thing that's wonderful about this is that it's a video camera. So, I mean, of course, what you can do in a very dim environment, like I can take my camera that has a smaller sensor and everything,
yeah,
and in a very dark environment, I can just open that thing up, make sure the sensor is only at the lowest, the best quality, if you will, of sensing, so it's not a lot of noise, and leave it open for 4 minutes on a still picture, right?
Yeah.
And I'll get photons eventually, and I'll get a picture. It'll be a little grainy, but I'll have some really quality shots.
Yeah.
Can't do that with video,
yeah,
right?
With
things
video,
move around.
30 frames
gotta,
a second. So
you got to do fast.
The
yeah.
longest you can open it up is 1/30 of a second.
So that's and really that's, the sensor you need to really get
yeah.
wide.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's pretty cool. It's a prototype. Also, I do have to say, just like every prototype camera is required to be, it is incredibly ugly. It's this this box with this lens attached, and it just looks really boxy and
it's
ugly
like a laptop
and disgusting.
No.
Here, I'll turn it around. I'll put it on the website. You can see it.
I think it's awesome.
It's
way technical.
Wally cute.
Just
yeah,
a box.
It's Wally cute. Good.
It's a
good.
Black box with a lens attached.
We'll have this up at geekspeak.org. You know. In fact, everything we talk about, all the stories and stuff, we actually collect them and put them up on geekspeak.org because it's always nice to see these stories later on. You know, and some of them, of course, are kind of essential to watch later on. In fact, I think, let's go ahead and do one more story before our next break. Bonnie, you want to tell us about freezer phones? I know it's kind
okay,
of
okay, this confused phone? Me, guys. All right, so I read this thing. It was on Boing Boing.
Wait, first off, all I know about this is freezer phone, so I'm confused too.
Okay.
Please enlighten us.
All right, so here's the deal. People apparently came up with a hack. Like if you have a locked and encrypted Android phone, apparently you can just put it in the freezer for an hour and then reboot it really quick, and then you can sort of break through everything and have your way with the phone.
Gotcha.
I don't understand why that would work.
Okay.
That confuses me.
I know what they're doing.
Okay.
Should we go on? No.
Well, maybe, yeah. Do you want to talk about it now, or do you want to talk about it after
I could tell people.
So
here's the question.
All right.
How could you break through encryption and such by putting a phone in a freezer? Why would that work? Ben, you have it? You know what's going on?
I don't.
Okay. Well, since most people don't know what this, I will explain it in just a minute.
Yeah, well, but first, what part of it is the temperature sensitive part?
It's to enable to do this hack, you have to get low temperature. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll describe it in a minute.
Well, I figured that much. I mean, you put the phone in the freezer. Of course, there's something with temperature.
It has to do with it has to do with loss of stored information because of thermal dynamics. But we'll get to this in just a minute.
Don't leave us hanging.
Ben, can you tell me who some people we need to thank today?
Yes, absolutely.
And why are we thanking them? We're thanking them because they've given money to the station, right?
Yes, we are thanking them.
Our publicly funded radio station.
Absolutely.
That needs financial support.
Okay. We've got one anonymous, and I don't know how to pronounce this. What is that?
Anonymous. It's
that's
an easy
Kurt Elaine.
Oh, that's
from
Kurt
Elaine. Idaho.
That's how you spell Kurt Elaine?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So, anonymous from Kurt Elaine. We've got Enid from Santa Cruz, or Enid. We've got Barry from Monterey. And we also have a thank yous for Wendy from Pacific Grove, Chuck from Salinas, and Marcia from Santa Cruz. Thank you all very much for calling in.
People and as Bonnie just from thither and yon.
And as Bonnie just mentioned, the reason why they're calling in and contributing is that the station is important to them, and we need financial backing from you, the listener. And it's very hard to say who you are because I can't address you by name. If I said George from Salinas and if I said Joyce from Ben Lomond, those people would respond and go, oh, they just said my name on the radio. But I am saying your name. I just can't say everybody's name. I'm saying your name because you're listening to the station, you're listening to the content we provide, and it's important to you. You still have it on even though it's Geek Speak. So...
Hey there, hey.
The stage, the content we produce, the knowledge we bring in, the wonderful stories that you hear all the time, and the wonderful music you hear all the time is only possible because you donate to the station. And so I ask you now to donate, to take the phone or go to the website and contribute what you feel is worth to you, this wonderful content we provide. And I know that it's good radio because I listen to KOSP and I love it. And when I listen to Dr. Don, I go, what an asset to our community. How fantastic.
Yeah.
And every week I'm honored to come in and help the station, help share the content we produce here on the radio. And I can only do that because some people have decided it's important to me, it's important enough to put some money behind it. And that is a difficult thing to do when you theoretically could sit back and not.
Yeah.
And that's about your contribution. Yeah.
Well, it's you say that it's difficult to do, but in practical terms, it's quite easily, actually. All you have to do is pick up a phone, and you don't even have to say anything like, hi, I'm calling because I think I want to give money, but I don't. Like, you pick up the phone, and it's the number is 888-777-1507. Someone answers the phone, and they say, hi, would you like to make a pledge? And you just go, yes, thanks for making this so easy. They ask you some questions, and then it's all done.
Yeah.
One of the questions they'll ask you is how much you would like to give. And perhaps some people are get a little stuck. I'm like, I should make the call before I know.
Right.
So, you know, we have suggestions for you. But, of course, it's entirely up to you how much you want to give. What's important to us is that it be comfortable for your actual budget.
Yeah, that's really the thing.
That you're promising an amount that's actually workable for you to give.
Right.
One way to make it workable is to give in monthly installments. I do that regularly.
So I do, too.
You can, in fact, give even leadership circle amounts in installments. It's fantastic. A lot of people give like $10 a month, you know, and it adds up something nice to KOSP. Right now, it becomes twice as much. Of course, we have a matching gift going on between Heidi Hopkins and Jim Mers. They had $1,000 in a matching gift. People have been chunking away at that. Looks like there's about 640 left to go to meet this match. Frankly, I'd like to meet the match right now and see how much more we can raise in this show because I would love to get to the $20,000 mark raised in the drive so far.
Right.
That's my personal goal. I would love to get there, but it's entirely up to you.
And it's up to you because you have the power to pick up the phone and call us.
Right.
And the number is 888-777-1507. We feel it's very important to continue producing great content. And I want to keep doing that.
Yeah.
And I just need you to participate by calling. So you call in right now and we'll keep on talking about Geek Speak stuff because that's why we're here and we love it. 888-777-1507.
And at KUSP.org, where you can give now if you're listening to this live broadcast, where if you're listening to the podcast, you can also go and give whenever you hear the show. It's still okay, even now, even though it feels like it's later and everything's over. Nope, it's still relevant. We still need your money. So if it's valuable to you and you're listening to the podcast, go ahead, go to KUSP.org and give there.
Definitely. All right. The freezer phone.
How does this work?
So you take an Android phone, you throw it in a freezer, and then you can crack into it. It's not that easy.
I was still confused.
Okay.
I'm curious, what's the part? What's the piece?
Okay. I will talk about this real quick.
Is it
now,
like a
keep in mind, I'm as everything I do on Geek Speak, I'm just making it up as I go. So here's how it works.
Lyle's Theory by Lyle Troxell.
Okay.
Please do. Let us know how wrong I am if you'd like. This is how it works. So when you're dealing with a full drive encryption, what this means is the hardware in the phone, the little tiny chips in the phone, something in there says, you know what? The storage on the device can be encrypted. That means mathematically secured, okay? And to do that, I need to have some key that will be the thing that can encrypt it and decrypt it, the lock and unlock. And that key is going to be something long. And I'm going to store that key on the phone because it's too long for a person to type. But I will actually create another key by a person's password that will store that key. Okay, so what we've got is the whole hard drive, all the data on the phone is encrypted and protected, and it's very strong and very secure and like age of the universe trying to break it. You can't, okay?
Okay, that's at room temperature.
Okay. That's room temperature. Okay. All this is room temperature. So now we have this key that is encrypted and saved on the drive. And that key is messed up by a password that only the person that has the phone knows. Ben, you've got a password on your phone, I'm assuming?
Mm-hmm.
That password is used to encrypt that key, and that key is saved on the drive. Now, if you give me the phone, I can go into the phone, I can find that key, and I can try to figure out what your password is and test it over and over and over again. And the problem is there's a lot of safety features in there that will slow this process down. But when you actually type in your password and unlock your phone, what's actually happening is the password gets put into RAM, the hash that's encrypted in, or the key, encrypted key, is also stored in RAM and decrypted. And then everything is accessed through that key, so the hard drive is readable. Mm-hmm. So it is actually in random access memory, which is volatile to power loss. So when the power goes off on the phone, that random access memory is goes away, and you can't get to it. That's why it's safe. But the actual space in memory, the actual electrons being stored, those are thermodynamics sensitive. They degrade over time at a predictable rate as the cell drains because of noise and heat and the physical part of the universe.
Right? So by putting it in the freezer, you would slow that process down.
That is right. You slow that process down, and that's the trick. Because if you can slow that down, pull the drive out, disable the technology, and while it's slowing down, then go and read it quick enough.
Oh my
gosh. You can
get
your password information. In fact, you can get your unencrypted key, and then you can get the drive. But the hardware of the phone is going to fight you because its goal is to protect it again.
Yeah.
So this is a very sensitive time when you can actually do this. Yes. Yeah. So that's the big thing.
Kind of crazy. So they wrote software with the assumption that things would degrade, like the data would be lost at a certain rate or whatever.
Right.
Because, I mean, who operates their phone in a freezer, right?
Right.
Except coming from a security standpoint, you can't look at things that way.
Right.
You have to look at all the different corner cases.
So let's say you're a police force and you're going to break into a room and you want to get that phone. So you bring with you a really cold chest and you break it and grab the phone and throw it in there. You've done it, right? As long as you keep that cold enough and you get to it soon enough, you can get to it. This is not something that means when you turn off, Ben, if you turn off your phone and it's off for an hour and then I pick it up and put it in the freezer, it's not going to help me at all.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I was imagining. Like, how would that help? You know, if you picked up a phone.
It's all time sensitive.
And in fact, apparently was developed with law enforcement in mind. It's called the Forensic Recovery of Scrambled Telephones, this method, or of course, FROST.
Nice. So I like it. All right. Ben, I'm curious about your next story.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you ever booted up, especially a Windows computer from 5 years ago, and you boot it up and it says, there's an issue with the drive. We just booted you into safe mode, right?
Yeah.
All right. So as it turns out, the Mars Curiosity rover also has a safe mode. And it's currently in safe mode right now.
Oh, no. What's going on?
There was a glitch. There's an issue with their flash memory. The Curiosity rover has two computers. They call it the A side and the B side computer. B side being the backup. The
song
extra,
you appreciate later. Oh, sorry.
The song you appreciate later. Exactly.
Sorry. Lyle, that was very silly.
So not only are we tech geeks, we're also surrounded by records in a music studio.
We are music minded. Yeah.
So in any case, there's an issue with the A side, the flash memory on the A side computer. So, Curiosity, the rover, this is the rover on Mars.
It should have died a long time ago. It's still going, right?
This is the one that was launched in 2011. Yeah, this is Curiosity.
Present moment.
So it failed to send back some data, and NASA engineers were like, what's going on? It didn't send back some data, and they looked into it and they found the rover chilling out in safe mode. Like, I don't know what's going on in safe mode. And
we finally realized it's on another planet.
No.
My mind is blown.
It's been sitting here for like 20 minutes just chilling out in safe mode. Can someone come help me?
Can they rejigger it from afar?
They can. I mean, you know, NASA engineers are brilliant. They build these things well.
They have really long hammers and just
that's
okay, let's get more geeky.
That's absurd. What they're doing is they are uploading some commands and some sequences and things like that for the B-side computer, so that way the B-side can actually take control of normal everyday operations.
I love that they've just got two computers. That's one way to do it, right?
Yeah.
Well, this one might crash. Let's have a second one.
Yeah, exactly. Steve Jobs did that with his keynotes, too. You know, new software would freeze up, and he just pressed, let's just press this button, switch to another completely new, clean environment, you know.
Clever.
Anyway.
Cool. Thank you. Hey, Bonnie, quite a while ago, we talked about a Kickstarter campaign, which was about trying to look at and kind of explore the games world from a feminist angle. And I don't want to say feminist angle, but to look at that space, dissect the built-in sexuality and space around it, right?
Well, not the sexuality, the sexism.
Sexism, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And there's a lot of sexuality
in these
games.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
And I think of those things as
We'll do
sexism,
a point counterpoint on sexism versus sexuality.
On another episode.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me, what is Anita doing now? She's the one that actually had the campaign. Sarkeesian.
Sarkeesian, yeah. Well, this came up some episodes ago, and it was in the context of... boy, it's just really kind of a hateful environment for some reason, women being involved in gaming. And so Anita Sarkeesian started a Kickstarter campaign to see, to be able to explore sort of the kinds of roles that females characters can have in video games. And for some reason, that just started off a firestorm, and one guy made a video game where you could beat up her face until it turned the whole screen
bloody. It was like a punching game. It was really
awful,
horrible.
Just awful. So there was that going on. She's getting a lot of hate mail and threats and so on. But on the other end, you know, she was asking for $6,000 and she got like $158,000 for a Kickstarter campaign. So like a lot of sort of debate back and forth, you know, on this issue. Anyway, so the video series that the Kickstarter campaign was for just launched yesterday for International Women's Day. And this one deals with like female tropes in video gaming and how they got there. And she's focusing on the damsel in distress for the first episode. Anyway, you'll be able to see that at our website.
And this is one of those things we actually call Geek Bits, because you got to really watch it to see it.
Yeah.
Video games. This project will examine the tropes, plot devices, and patterns most commonly associated with women in gaming from a systemic, big picture perspective.
And so basically, it's a, you know, it's a research project in a lot of ways at looking at the game space. And it's done in this video way to really pass the word around. So
well,
hopefully they'll make change in how women are portrayed in video games for this topic.
It's going to be a pretty big series. The first episode is like 23 minutes long. And it looks at sort of how the damsel in distress got into video games, where the damsel in distress came from in popular culture, and how damsel in distress compares to the hero story. Like, okay, every character can be incapacitated or damaged in some way, but if it's a lady, she has to wait to be rescued,
right.
And if it's a male character, they use their smarts to get out.
Right.
So interesting look.
Yeah, and of course, this is not just in video games. That kind of trope exists throughout game space. I've been doing Dungeons & Dragons for a long time, and that is one of those canned style of, you know, save the princess kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
we see it in films all the time as well. So it's nice to be able to take a look at it. I think that the way to make change in this kind of space is to bring light about the problem, right? The issue is people don't think about it, and that's why we have these structures.
Creating awareness.
So creating awareness is very important. That's one of the things we do here on Geek Speak. So I think I'm very excited about watching this. It's funny, we're talking about radio and how important radio is. And of course, we all love the television too.
Yes.
So it's not me.
No?
Me.
Not
the
at
tubes.
All?
Maybe I'm the only one.
You're going to watch this video though, aren't you?
Probably not.
Oh.
No,
just not your guy.
I'll have awareness on your behalf.
So maybe you should spend some time thinking about why you don't want to watch this.
Oh, I don't know.
I think you're good, man.
I think I'm okay.
Next story, sir.
Sure. Or
thank you. Please.
I've got
As Bonnie so rightly said last time, the reason why we're thanking people is because they're donating to the station. We are welcome you to do that during this hour. And afterwards, if you're listening to the podcast, it is essential for GeekSpeak. If you're listening to the podcast, you'd be anywhere on the planet, right? And you're just listening to GeekSpeak potentially. But the reason why GeekSpeak is here is because the station is here. That's the only reason we do the show, is because we're here on the radio and we have support from the community here in Santa Cruz, in this Central Coast, California, and everyone that contributes. Even if you're somewhere else, you can contribute to the station as well. We welcome your donations to help make. You know, I get requests every once in a while. How can I help GeekSpeak? You know, can I give you guys money? I'm like, yeah. Go to KOSP.org anytime you want and donate, because that's how we're supported.
And if you give right now in this moment at 12:40 a.m. on the 9th of March 2013, Heidi Hopkins and Jim Mers have a matching gift. It was $1,000. People have been taking away bits of it. There's 530 left to go. I would like to see it gone.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and
not gone, but into the coffers of KUSP, because that means we get done with this pledge drive all the sooner and we can get back to uninterrupted geekery.
And your money gets matched, right?
Matched
so right now, that,
Heidi Hopkins,
that's a good motivation, I think, for you to make
and
pick up the phone.
People have done that.
Yeah.
People have done that. In fact, I'd like to thank some of them. We've got a thank you to Joyce from Scotts Valley, Bill from Boulder Creek, thank you. Victor from Capitola and Bobby from Carmel Valley. Thank you, guys. We've got Patrick from Santa Cruz, and he said, "Billie Jean and the Geeks, what else could be better?" was his comment.
Who's Billie Jean?
I don't know.
you got close to that with meant? Bonnie Jean. Yeah. I think that
probably that's what was meant.
I'm not as clever.
We got Charlotte from I almost said South Carolina, Santa Cruz. Thank you very much. We have Karya from Capitola. Thank you. We have Maureen from Pacific Grove, who says KUSP was the lifeline during the Loma Prieta earthquake. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I remember that.
We have a thank you from Palti from Prunedale. Patty. We have a thank you from Brenda from Santa Cruz, and we have a thank you to Keith from Santa Cruz, who said, "Congratulations, geeks, on surviving the end of the world. Great Mayans think alike." Great Mayans.
I get it.
Mayans.
Hey. I see you what know, you did there.
Keith was on the show. That's Keith Musket. He was on the show at the end of December to talk about the Mayan calendar and had amazing knowledge about the Mayan calendar. We had a full hour on Geek Speak about that.
That was a cool show.
So now that it's past the end of the world, if you want to know why and what happened, what the information, it was actually pretty geeky about time and the Mayan calendar. You can go to our archives up at geekspeak.org and listen to any show you want. Since 2006, I don't know, thousands of hours. I wouldn't do that to yourself, but it's interesting when you listen to those older episodes. You know, we introduce what USB is, and that's one of the things we did on the show.
What is USB anyway?
Universal Serial Bus, sir.
There we go. Knowledge.
During Geek Speak, we've been pushing for years this idea of Geek Bits. These are videos that we like to show and explore, but really have to show, and it's not the right form for radio. So we talk about them on air, and then you go and visit them. We already covered one today. But today, what I'm going to do is suggest that you do go to a website. And what you do is you go to kusp.org and go ahead and submit some money to the station. It's very simple to do online. It's quite easy. You don't have to talk to anybody. But if you'd like to talk to somebody, you can easily do that as well. In the other room are, I don't know, six volunteers waiting at phones, and they're willing to take your call, and they will make it very painless. All you have to do is give a call, and they'll pick up the phone and say, "How much would you like to donate to KUSP?" And you just have to make that decision. I recommend a $10 a month. And the reason I'm suggesting that recommendation is it's the value that I am doing currently as an employee of the state. That's what I can afford in my budget. So that's the one I chose. It's a good value in the sense that I know I'm contributing what I can afford right now. I'm moving into a higher tech space right now. I'm about to transfer over and start working full time in San Jose. I'm going to be making a little bit more money. And I'm going to be, next pledge drive, I'll be increasing that because my lifestyle can support that, right? And that's a decision only you can make. But the decision you can't make is to sit there and not donate at all, because that means...
That would be a shame if you made that decision.
That's true.
That's sort of a non-decision, really.
Yeah, that's right. It's not
doing
a decision.
Doing nothing.
That's good. I like non-decision. Ben, you've got a story about watching planets. Now, it sounds a little boring, because I know
planets
it takes...
form.
Oh, well, that's more
exciting. Watching planets. Look at just spinning and spinning.
Yeah, I was looking at the ground and like watching planet
Earth. You
were
hanging out in Bali, weren't you?
Yeah.
I think grass has grown a little.
I'm looking at Earth right now. It's great. We got this image from the VLT, that's the European Southern Observatory's aptly named Very Large Telescope, VLT. I love astronomers. They either come up with really bizarre names like that, just super simple, or things like the name of the star. They took an infrared image of the star HD100546, which is a banal name. That's about 335 light years away. And if anyone's into constellations, it's in the constellation Musca, or Musca. In any case, what they did is they actually physically blocked out the light from the star by putting a screen in between the telescope and the star itself. And they were actually able to directly image what they think is a planet in the process of forming.
Once the light of the star got dimmed, then they could see the dimmer planet doing it.
It's kind of like if you're looking at someone and the sun is right behind their head, if you hold up your hand and block out the sun, then you can see them better. That's basically what they did, except with this
fancy
planet,
screen time thing.
Candidate protoplanet. Basically, there's just this huge disk of gas and dust that's around this star, which is relatively young. And it's the way we think a lot of planets form. And we were able to directly image it in the infrared. So that's pretty cool.
So
baby planets.
They're watching it now, but it's from 35,000 light years away. So it really happened 35,000 years
335.
Away. 335.
Yeah, so
It wasn't yesterday.
But that's kind of what we always have.
Time's relative.
I'm looking at you, Lyle, and really it's, what is it, a foot a nanosecond is how fast
it's really light travels.
Or maybe 7 feet away. So I'm looking at you 7 nanoseconds into the past.
I think that it's less than that. Less than nanoseconds, actually.
But I think it's a foot of nanoseconds.
Really? Okay.
Back up a little.
Mm-hmm. One of those things I don't know.
Anyway, pretty cool
Can
image.
Can you still see me, Ben?
Even now you're eight nanoseconds away. But yeah, I mean, we're looking basically back in time 335 years, because that's how long it took the light from this candidate protoplanet to get to us. So it's kind of cool.
Awesome. So we get questions every once in a while on passwords. And recently we had this wonderful question on... what's the best password? So, Ben, can you give me your current strategy on passwords?
Yeah, I do.
Because it's kind of opinionated. I mean, go ahead.
My current strategy on passwords? I do have to say that this question came from a listener in Belgium. First of all, it's awesome we have listeners in Belgium to the podcast. Second of all, I think Belgium might be my favorite country currently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He just came from Bali, too, you guys.
I just wanted to give a shout-out to Belgium. That's all.
Well, why don't you go live there?
I spent a bunch of time in Belgium. How about that? I came back because I couldn't bear to be away from GeekSpeak for all that long.
That's
any case.
What
I do, so I'll just tell you my passwords. No, I'm kidding. What I do is I store all of my passwords in a piece of software called 1Password.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all protected by one very long, complex password, which I've crammed into my cranium. I've memorized it. And I can type that password and get to any of my other passwords. Now, this is a little controversial because it's a single point of failure. Of course, someone needs access to either my computer or any of the devices that data file is on, right?
And that software actually protects itself by relocking itself regularly.
Yeah, so I'll unlock it.
As long as your laptop's not put in the freezer before it locks itself. See, now we know why that worked.
Well, and that's why our listener in Belgium was asking, right? Because he has a bunch of just like really in crypto passwords that are hard to memorize. And mm-hmm. So how does he make them sort of available when he forgets what they are?
Yeah. So 1Password is a really good option. The only downside is you can't remember any of your passwords unless you either have an algorithm for creating them or something like that.
But traditionally what people do is they'll have a few passwords, right? They'll use 1Password for their bank stuff and they'll use another password for something else. I mean, sometimes people use 1Password for everything. That's highly unrecommended.
Yeah,
right?
Sometimes people have 1Password for all the high priority stuff like banks, a medium priority password and a low priority password.
Yeah, and
that's a better way?
It's better to do that because if you're logging into some site and you're using your really pricey or really hard to memorize and very strong password, happens to be the same one as your bank, that site you're logging into, you don't necessarily can't trust that there's not bad guys there, but you also can't trust that someone didn't have a bug on their system, which allows that password to be then shared. So you have to assess whether you're giving that password out to everybody every time you use a website. Mm-hmm. And that, when you know, I log into every single thing I possibly can. Every time somebody makes a new service, I check it out because one of the things we do is check out what's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I have my Twitter account as my first name, right? Because I tried it before anyone tried it. And in doing that, my password's everywhere. So it's essential that I don't make the password that's everywhere important. And I do use a really low, simple password for these things I sign up for all the time. As soon as I think the service has any value at all, I then go into 1Password, I use the same one, and make a highly random, long thing that I can't memorize. And this is the thing that's really important to understand. At this time, computer science is so much better at doing things like memorizing passwords or figuring out what a human being will do that you can't use your smarts to outsmart the system. Mm-hmm. You're not as smart as the technology and the tricks we have now in computer science to figure out passwords. So if you think you're being clever, you're wrong.
It's basically you against the wisdom of the crowds, right?
That's the real issue, right?
Yeah.
You know, some site gets 6 million people passwords and you look at them via theoretical analysis, right? You basically just take a look at them and figure out what people are doing. And once you do that, you've got this canon of attacks you can use. And that's the thing, is it's not a human being that's deciding to attack with passwords. It's a system, right? Mm-hmm. It's a computer program that runs. So it doesn't care who you are. You know, oh, it doesn't matter. No one really wants my password. That's not really true.
The Borg cares.
The Borg cares. Exactly.
I do want to put this into perspective because we can talk about this and say like the only good way to do it is if we do this and do that and da da da. But the most important thing is that the most important thing is to not be the low-hanging fruit. So if you are one of those people who's listening to the show and you have your same password for everything, especially people who have passwords for Facebook and their bank being the same password, you guys need to act way more than anyone else does.
Right.
You guys need to go and change the bank password and make it something much more complicated than that. You know, and don't make it something like red, orange, or something like that. Make it something longer than that. In fact, one good way of doing it, you were saying, is to pick four or five completely unrelated words and have it be those five words,
yeah.
right? So that's one way you could do
the
it.
The crucial thing, and I really agree with you, Ben, there's two passwords. First off, we were trained for a long time, don't write your password down. Don't write your password down. Uh-huh. That's stupid. Because if you're not writing your password down, Ben, you're writing your password down in this application called 1Password.
Yeah,
you're actually writing
it down.
In a
more secure way than putting
all that.
I'm not putting a sticky on my monitor. But.
I would argue that most people, if they have a file cabinet next to their desk and they have a folder in there that's called, you know, cat paws, and then inside there there's a file that has all their passwords written on it. That is so much more secure than almost everything else people are doing
these
right?
days. Yeah,
yeah,
because if you're going to
be in your house, right?
you're not going to go physically to a location to hack into someone's bank.
Right.
You're much more likely to do it, you know, and it's cheaper to do it in a cyber.
So do what Ben's recommending. Have a password that's unique for every bank account you have. Have a unique password. If you are trying to access that a lot, then maybe you need to start memorizing that password. Mm-hmm. But right now, you don't. You just need to write it down somewhere safe. I'd make two copies of it. Keep in mind, though, a bank, you can always go in and show them your ID and talk to them, and they'll reset your password. And then your email account, the primary email that you use for all those other services, that has to be a unique password. Because if you're on another service and they know your email address and they have a password from you and it's the same as the password for your email, you got a problem.
Yeah, because they can send a password reset and then check your email, reset your password, and then your other service is compromised. And you can escalate it, I mean, from the point of view of an attacker, that's what you're doing, is you're finding some fairly innocuous, low security thing, and then using that privileged knowledge, escalating where you are until you get up to someone's email or their bank account or something like
and
that.
And then the last thing is, if you do want to memorize a password, it needs to be long, because that's the most tricky thing. You can have like
entire phrases or something.
Yeah, and you can have a password that's weird and has strings and dollars and all this stuff and is long, but the length's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So if you can have a phrase like, "Hey, Bonnie, thanks for being here on GeekSpeak," and that's the password, that's actually a really good password. It's actually also a really true statement. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, hey, no problem.
But we're going to talk more about technology in just a second. Ben's going to tell us an amazing story about something. He's going to pull
it
out.
I am?
Yeah, you are.
Okay, I'll pull it out of nowhere.
But first, Bonnie.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hey, you know, this pledge drive thing's going pretty well. I thought we were trying to get to 20,000, but in fact, we're trying to get to 25,000. There's like $23,000 or something like that in the coffers so far during this drive. That's great.
4 days.
And it's not 115,000,
which is what we need.
Aiming for.
Absolutely.
Right. So Heidi Hopkins and Jim Murr still helping us out. They had $1,000. Looks like there's about 290 left on that. So if one person wanted to give $20 a month and another person had $50, we'd be there.
Right.
So if you're in one of those two categories, go ahead and give us a call right now, 888-777-1507. Do it because you love KUSP and because you value programming and because you're listening right now and understand that we're a publicly supported radio station. You can also go to KUSP.org. That's true if you want to have your gift matched by Heidi Hopkins or Jim Murs, or if you're listening to the podcast later and have a little something you can throw into the hat. KUSP.org.
And keep in mind, the experience, if you've never donated to a station before, the experience of actually being partially an owner at that level is a really wonderful experience. As I said, I grew up here at the station.
Yeah, owner is kind of it, right? It
is,
right? You have a greater sense of ownership
Absolutely.
Over the station. You find that you're sort of more keenly interested in the story of KUSP and what's happening there.
And I'm always reminded when I did leave home finally, I was going to the station as a child, as I mentioned in the earlier show, and I grew up here to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. And when I became an adult and had my job, I one time decided to donate to KUSP, mostly because I was at the station. Everybody was excited. And I was young.
I got caught up in it.
I donated like 18 or something, right?
Yeah.
After I did that, I felt a completely different ownership to the station, a different feeling about my contributions. I felt like I was partially responsible for the station, which is funny because, of course, I grew up here. So I'd think that I'd already have that feeling.
Well,
I didn't until I donated. That feeling is something that I want to give to you. If you listen to the station and haven't donated yet, do it. Find a value that works for you, for your budget, and do it. I promise you it'll be a rewarding experience. And if it's not, email me, lyle@geekspeak.org, and I'll talk to you about it.
You essentially become a steward of a community resource.
Yeah, and then when you talk to somebody else, you go. They say, "What station listen to?" Oh, I don't only just listen to KUSP; I support KUSP, and you should too. It's like this. It's really cool.
Yeah.
I highly recommend
so
donating
you're saying
to the station.
It's like multi-level marketing.
man. Don't do that. I feel dirty and cheap. 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Before you do your news story, Ben, will you do some more thank yous?
Oh, yeah. I've got a couple thank yous. We'd like to say thank you to Don in Santa Cruz and Kenneth in Salinas and Marianne's Ice Cream in Santa Cruz. Thank you all for donating to KUC. It's fantastic.
I know what I'm doing after the show.
I was thinking about that. Ice cream does sound good. So, I have a really quick story. I haven't really gotten all of the details out of the story because I wasn't expecting to talk about it. But it's basically a blog that someone wrote about how everyone makes the claim that violent video games make people violent. And this blog is arguing maybe that's an oversimplification.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk about the link between... One of the things that they say in the blog is when you talk about the link between cigarettes and your health, right? They had hundreds or thousands of studies that they had to do before they could really make the claim that, yes, cigarettes are bad for you in all these different ways. But people seem to be really keen to say that violent video games make people violent, I think, because there's more of a personal aspect. There's an emotional aspect to it, right? Mm-hmm. Also, pictures of snakes apparently make people violent, right? So
people are violent. That's the
segue. Man, if you have a video game with snakes, you'd really be in trouble.
Well, I mean, you know, when you play a video game or when you see a picture of a snake that you're thinking might bite you, you know, you get a reaction, a physiological reaction, right? And so, of course, the fight or flight thing. And so that physiological reaction, of course, that would change your behavior, right? It makes a lot of sense. Same with, like, if you're watching a sports game or something.
Yeah.
Or even better, playing a sports game, you know? Like,
you know, I'm at the university in California, Santa Cruz. I speak to a lot of people about video games. They have an amazing video game program there. Or they do. I'm leaving, so they have an amazing game program. And the people that run it are thinking about these things all the time, right? There's a lot of dialogue about how games affect our world. But one thing that always seems to stick in my mind is that every generation has the new technology that's ruining America, right? There's this wonderful story of when the phonograph comes along, the fear is that everyone would stop learning how to sing because, you know, it used to be that people would sit on their stoops and sing songs and America would become mute because only the specialists would record songs and everyone would listen. To some degree, that's happened.
What's a phonograph?
Exactly. And every single time that happens, we get that kind of feedback that the technology is going to change the world and it's bad. And I would say, yeah, the technology is going to change the world, but I promise you, it's not all bad.
Well, it's not absolute. Bad. I mean, for every person who jumps on the technological bandwagon, there's the Luddite who appreciates the old-timey.
Absolutely. Exactly. And I appreciate, I got to say, the newest technology, but also taking a moment to be away from technology as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm going to urge you in the last minute of Geek Speak not to take that break. Please do call in 888-777-1507 and tell us how wonderful the station is by putting some money in the coffers here to support KOSP. 888-777-1507. Celebrating 40 years together, this is 88.9 KOSP Santa Cruz, streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. And all the stuff we talk about at GeekSpeak is up at geekspeak.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. I'm Lyle Troxel. In the air with me is Bonnie Jean Pripps and Ben Jaffe. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks to you for calling in, too.
See you next week.